your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are. Grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got really a fine guest with us this evening. And he's first vice president of Capital Research Center, but also he's the author of a book that's really, really insightful. And it's Subversion Incorporated, and it gets into the acorn problem that we experienced a number of years ago. But also, we're going to bring current somewhat of the latest. He's been, on Fox News Network and all the main networks and so forth. Welcome to our program, Matthew Verdun.
Oh, happy to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what, go ahead and tell us a little bit more about your work with Capital Research and other things you've done in the past so that our visiting audience can become better acquainted with you.
Sure, yeah. Okay. I've been at Capital Research Center for 11 years, but I had an interest in studying radical leftists long before that. What we do here at Capital Research Center, our website's capitalresearch.org, is we do opposition research on the left-wing groups, left-wing political movements, who funds them, how they try to work the system to accomplish their goals, and so on. So that's what we do. So it means that anytime a group like Acorn does something or George Soros does something, we investigate and try to write up a report on it. So the idea is that these groups are up to no good, and we're trying to expose them and let people know about them with a view to cutting off their funds.
Right. Now, this book that you originally wrote, it focused in on Acorn. Is that correct?
Yes, Acorn and Obama.
And Obama. Now, those two are closely linked together, are they not, for years?
Oh, of course. Yes, of course they did. Obama goes way back in time with Acorn. He worked for an Acorn-affiliated group in Chicago in 1992 called Project Vote. And that was about getting out the vote that helped elect the radical U.S. Senator, Democrat Carol Moseley Braun. And, he was cutting his teeth in political organizing back then, and that was a big success. So that helped propel his career forward. And then he also dealt with, the Catholic Church. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development helped him. And various other things. There's something called the Developing Communities Project and all sorts of other organizations on the far left that funded and assisted him in his work. And he knew about Acorn back then, and he later complimented them on their work. He gave trainings at Acorn. He spoke at Acorn meetings. He even represented Acorn in court twice once he became a lawyer in later years. So he was deeply involved in Acorn, and in 2008 his campaign tried to downplay and in some cases lie about his connection to Acorn. But the truth is the truth, and we and other investigative reporters were able to to uncover the truth and show the extent of his involvement with ACORN, which in itself is a radical left-wing group that existed from 1970 till, I guess it was 2010 when it filed bankruptcy. But then it didn't really go away. It just turned into like 30 little groups across the country that don't use the name ACORN.
Right. Your book is so insightful, especially because you're tying many of these radical groups, like what the Students for Democratic Society and the Weathermen and all that. Were these some of the beginnings in the anti-war movement? Would you say that helped sort of fuel this group coming together?
Yes, that's fair to say, George. It grew out of the radical 1960s. Wade Rathke was the first CEO of ACORN. They called him chief organizer was his title, but really it's a CEO or president of the group. And he was originally he was a draft card burner. He organized resistance to the Vietnam War in the 60s through SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, which of course is anything but. SDS later broke up into all sorts of different splinter groups, one of which was the Weathermen, the Weathermen terrorist organization, and Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn were involved in, and they were later friends of Obama and helped launch his political career in their living room by hosting a fundraiser for him when he ran in the mid-90s for the Illinois State Senate. But returning to ACORN, ACORN started out in the 60s. It was a project of NWRO, which was the National Welfare Rights Organization, and that group was very successful in convincing people in the inner cities, particularly, that welfare was a right, and that if they weren't getting what the group thought they were entitled to, they needed to fight. They needed to fight for their rights. So this concept of welfare rights came about, which would be anathema to Americans. People think of welfare as a gratuity. It's a discretionary thing. They don't think of it as a right. And this has been the traditional, normal American way of thinking about welfare. In any event, the National Welfare Rights Organization wanted to expand and diversify, so they created a multi-issue group called ACORN in 1970. ACORN was originally based in Arkansas. It was the Arkansas Community Organizations for Reform Now. But 7 or 8 years later, once it had spread to a whole bunch of states nearby, like Texas and Louisiana and so on, they changed the name to Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, or ACORN. The significance of Wade Rathke in all this is he set up, as an organizer for the National Welfare Rights Organization in Springfield, Massachusetts. It's 1969 or so, he organized a welfare rights drive. He took a whole bunch of angry welfare recipients in Springfield, Massachusetts, stormed the local welfare office, demanding benefits that they thought that they were entitled to. It was maybe winter coats or something like that. But it was so successful, and I'm putting that word in scare quotes, it was so successful that it spawned a couple of days of rioting. So the welfare rights organization knew that they had the right man, the right organizer in Wade Rathke, so they sent him to Arkansas to start ACORN. And that's how it started. And it's a radical left-wing organization, and it had been going strong. It was going strong for 40 years until 41 years or so, 40 years, until it was forced into bankruptcy after a series of scandals.
Right. When it was organized there in Arkansas, did the Clintons have any contact or knowledge of it at that time or not? Do you know?
I never found that. This is, we're talking like early 70s.
Oh, I see. Yeah, they weren't over there until later. That's right.
No, Bill was over smoking pot in Oxford at that time.
Right.
Oxford or Cambridge in England.
Yeah, well, didn't he travel into Moscow during that period over there?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think he took a trip.
But I've heard he went to Moscow, yeah, which would not be surprising. And then Hillary Clinton was out writing her bachelor's thesis at college on Saul Alinsky, the guru of community organizing, author of Rules for Radicals and Reveille for Radicals, who started a community organizing pressure group called Industrial Areas Organization. And they liked each other so much that he offered her a job, which she didn't take because she took a different offer. But she was a big fan of Alinsky, and they actually maintained a correspondence for years afterwards. So all of this was swirling, this was in the background. But what's something, a little interesting story very few people know about that I do cover in the book, so you'd know about it.
Right.
Is that it was Republicans that got Acorn into the voter fraud business inadvertently. Winthrop Rockefeller in 1970 was a Republican governor of Arkansas. You may remember him.
Right.
You're old enough.
Yes.
I don't know if you are. Hard to tell from your voice. Anyway.
I'm 73 years old.
Well, then you may remember him.
Yeah, I remember. So I remember a little bit.
He was kind of a mushy moderate to liberal Republican governor of Arkansas. And he hired this new group, Acorn, Wade Rathke, to its leader to go out and do some voter registration. And gave him something like $5,000 in cash in a brown paper bag. The assumption when you hire somebody to do voter registration, I guess, is that they're going to do voter registration that helps you. But
right.
They didn't, that was actually not discussed from what I could find in my research. And Rathke didn't do anything to help him and just kept the money and used the money to hire his first employee at Acorn. It was Republican efforts to Republicans got Acorn into the voter registration business, which was something Acorn did for many years, and that it allowed it to consolidate its power base, and its supporters committed lots of felonies along the way, particularly with voter registration fraud. So Republicans got Acorn into the voter fraud.
Well, that is interesting.
It's an interesting
story. Matthew, that's very interesting.
Isn't it? And Wade Rathke and Winthrop Rockefeller, they got along really well because Wade Rathke's very smooth guy,
right.
Very charming, disarming. He can may not like him, but he's got it, right? That thing.
Right.
Like Bill Clinton has. He can
he's charming. He's a very charming person.
He can make you think you're the only person in the world that matters.
I got you.
So they are actually joking. They both had that they should switch cowboy boots. They should switch boots because they both had the initials WR.
Oh,
Wade
I see.
And Winthrop Rockefeller.
Well, that's interesting.
That was funny.
Yeah.
So they bonded.
Yeah, I got you.
And then Wade Rathke took advantage of him, took his money. Rockefeller lost to the Democrat, and that's it. That's history.
Boy, I tell you, this is all around, swirls around Saul Alinsky and his teachings on rules for radicals. Is that fair to say? I mean, they learned how to be activists in community affairs and so forth?
Sure. He set the template. He was
right.
The great thinker on community organizing in America, and he was very involved with, he didn't call himself a communist, although in terms of his ideology, political ideology, it's pretty clear he was. He hung out with Communist Party members and organizers, and you know, was really radical anti-American types, and he didn't really care about that as long as they could get the job done. He didn't have, you know, Alinsky didn't say a lot of overtly anti-American things, but, you know, he'd say things that by implication are anti-American, like he was happy that in America you had the freedom to protest the system. That was about the nicest thing he could say about America, whereas in, like, the Soviet Union, you couldn't do that.
Right.
So that's sort of, what's the expression? Damning, he was damning America with faint praise. So,
okay.
Now, he was a radical guy. His hero, his mentor, was John Lewis from the 30s, I guess it was, the great mine workers union leader.
Yes.
The guy with big bushy eyebrows and who gave impassioned speeches and so on. A demagogue, like, you know, like most effective labor leaders are. And, you know, that's what it comes out of. The radical connections stayed with Acorn throughout the whole time it existed.
Now, didn't they use regular strong-arm tactics and intimidation where they'd go in and occupy welfare offices, state or whatever, and then try to push for more welfare rights? Is that some of the tactics or what?
Right. Well, yes, this is what came out. This is what the National Welfare Rights Organization did.
Right, right.
And then Acorn adopted a lot of those tactics. They would do all sorts of things. Like if they wanted to get a certain result at a city council meeting somewhere, they would have people, you know, storm the place and cause a ruckus and, like, you know, upset and knock over the furniture and, you know, intimidate the lawmakers into doing what they wanted. Along with, like, Jesse Jackson and whatever, they pioneered new, you know, techniques like surrounding banks with protesters and then getting out a bullhorn, a megaphone, and demanding that the banks do whatever it is they wanted them to do, like hire more black people or whatever, regardless of merit. And they, you know, they specialized in that kind of thing, these in-your-face tactics that most people wouldn't consider acceptable. And sometimes it led to violence. And they were, you know, for the most part, they were okay with that, although Wade Rathke would always try to spin it away as, you know, it's just some rogue element did this. It wasn't part of Acorn's official policy to do this.
Right.
So they always had an excuse.
They lied. They lied, too. There's a lie here about this Lewis woman lying to Lou Dobbs on CNN one time. So they weren't above lying,
Lewis, yes.
Right? I mean, they would lie to get their, what, political agenda true, right?
Right. Lying was part of the job.
Yeah, it's ruthlessness, and I see the same thing coming out of this Antifa group, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They shout down people, and I believe Mark Bray, who is a Dartmouth University professor visiting there, is saying that on an NPR interview just in the last few days, he said that's okay to shout down people that they have determined to be fascist. But it's their determination, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, it's all screwed up, and it's so sick out here. What do you think?
Well, they have a pretty confused idea of what... of what a fascist is, because if they were to actually step back and be objective, they'd realize that they're closer to fascists than,
well, that's the problem,
you know, conservatives
with this.
And Republicans are. They're the fascists.
Yeah, you know, in my studies over the last 35 years, I've seen this TIDES group or this TIDES organization.
TIDES Foundation, which is a funder of radical groups.
Right, they have been a conduit into many of these groups, have they not, to fund these groups?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, they're a donor-advised fund, or sometimes they're called a donors collaborative. And the idea is that you give your money to them, and you get the tax deduction right away, like off of your income taxes.
Right.
You get it that tax year, and then you park the money with them, and you give them guidance on what you want them to spend it on. But, you know, if obviously it's going to be something about, you know, a radical left-wing cause, or you wouldn't have given the money to them. You would give the money to a donor-advised fund that wasn't political.
Right.
So, yeah, they will, you can instruct them what to do, or you can just sort of leave it up to them, or a combination of the two. And the benefit for a lot of wealthy donors who support ugly radical causes is they get to donate the money secretly. Nobody knows that they're funding these horrible projects and organizations.
What, is not some of the largest corporations in the country then
so
contributing
to
Tides?
It's said to have contributed a lot to Tides.
And then Tides secretly is distributing this to these very, very extreme leftist groups, right?
Right. That's a lot of people, you know, well, we don't know because it's not disclosed.
Oh, okay.
When
now,
someone like
now
one, discusses it in public.
Right.
When someone acknowledges it, then they, you know,
they have
then
to.
We find out.
Right. Now, this Druman
no,
Pike.
No, they don't have to. They don't have to, but people talk, so, you know.
Oh, well, I see, yeah. In other words, people that know what's going on. I got you.
Yeah, they know what's going on, or they forget that it's supposed to be a secret. You know, things get out.
Right. Now, there was I think Radke's brother embezzled some money from Acorn at one time. Is that true?
Yes, he did. Yes, he
and
did.
And this Druman Pike,
$1 million.
Yeah, Druman Pike picked up that money, didn't he? I mean, to pick up that deficit.
Druman Pike, yes.
Yeah.
He was the founder of Tides Foundation. And what happened
That's
is
right. yeah.
that Wade Rathke's little brother took the $948,000 out of Acorn accounts and so on, including pension funds, as I recall. And he blew the money on, you know, fancy trips to New York and shopping sprees and limousine rides and, other, you know, frivolities. And this was around the year 2000 that he got caught internally at Acorn. So they kept him on. They decided to keep the scandal in-house. They didn't fire him. And he was, like, on a repayment schedule. So he was, like, repaying it slowly, basically, till the end of
like $10 a month forever, right?
something crazy.
Right.
That was never going to put a dent in it.
Right.
This was exposed somehow. A New York Times reporter, Stephanie Strom, I believe, got the story in 2008 about the embezzlement. And then that broke wide open. I think it was May or June of 2008. And then that, you know, that was a major scandal. And the funders, the people that were writing checks to Acorn, were really concerned because they wanted to make sure the money went to the causes that they thought they were supporting instead of into Wade Rathke's brother's pocket. And it was a big scandal, and it hurt Acorn because one of their biggest financial supporters cut them off, and that was the philanthropic arm of the Catholic Church, the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, CCHD, cut off Acorn, and that was kind of like driving a stake through the vampire's heart. And then Acorn limped into 2009, and then at 2009, Hannah Giles and James O'Keefe III were running the sting undercover video sting operation at Acorn. So they would go in and pretend to be a pimp and his prostitute employee, girlfriend, whatever. And they'd claim that they wanted to start a brothel with underage girls that would be illegally smuggled in from Latin America, and they just would make up a crazy story and they'd make little variations on it
sure.
to see what they could get away with, to see how far would you have to go before the people at Acorn would say, no, we don't want to help you. And they never really found that limit.
Right.
So
they went for
like
the deal,
guy,
in other words, right? They went for it.
Right.
God.
They went for it because
yeah.
they're used to dealing with shady criminal types. And the intake worker they were dealing with, you know,
right.
I think they had a quota. They weren't very well paid, so they weren't really in a position, from their point of view, they weren't in a position to refuse new business, right? New potential members.
Right.
Help. So they got them on videotape in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, New York, all over the place. All over the country, Acorn employees were saying, yep, we can help you. Geez, you don't want to put on the tax form that you're a prostitute, so why don't you put entertainer? Because it's a kind of entertainment, isn't it? You know?
Right, entertainment,
have these
right?
kinds of discussions.
Yeah.
Prostitution as
yeah.
entertainment.
Entertainment,
sure,
yeah.
yeah, that was their thinking.
My
and
gosh.
They would, yeah, and they would lie,
yeah.
and, you know, instructed them to lie. I don't think they did, they followed through on these plans, but the point is that they showed their willingness to do these terrible things. What somebody else in one of them, the intake workers in Brooklyn, said, you know, you got to take all your cash and put it in tin cans and bury it in your backyard so, you know, the IRS doesn't know about it.
Oh.
Or, you know, banks or whatever, so nobody can track your money. So they're just telling them to do all these, like, things, all these shady things that you wouldn't expect reputable organizations to be encouraging. And then, of course, Acorn, this was September of 2009. That's when the rollout began. That helped launch Andrew Breitbart's site, Big Government. Big Government still exists, but it's been, like, merged. It's been blended into the Breitbart website now, you know, Breitbart.com, the news website.
Right, right.
But that was a major section of it, you know, covering politics and so on. Big Government, they called it.
Okay.
And that helped launch it. That was, like, on the second day of their existence, and that the first video hit, and they coordinated it. They went on, the videos were launched on the Glenn Beck program back when he was on the Fox News channel. And so there was a pattern that Andrew Breitbart came up with. He was brought on later in the process. He wasn't involved at all, contrary to what some lefties have been saying. He wasn't involved in setting up the undercover video sting. Once they had the goods, once they had the videos, then they went to him and said, you know, how should we handle this? And he came up with a method, and his idea was that you drop one video, let the Acorn people lie and distance themselves from it, say, oh, that's just, you know, one bad apple, blah blah blah, and then like a couple of days later, they drop another video showing largely
right.
the same thing with Acorn workers in another big American city, and you know they just kept doing it over and over again, and then you know so Acorn was just looking like fools after you know the third
right.
or fourth or fifth or sixth video, you know they were revealed to be the liars that they are. And Bertha Lewis, who had taken over for Wade Rathke, because Rathke was fired in mid-2008 by Acorn's National Board for his role in the embezzlement scandal and the cover-up, he was replaced by Bertha Lewis at that time. So Bertha Lewis, I like to call her Acorn's terminal chief organizer.
Really?
She
really?
Was the last one.
Gah. Well, you know,
yeah.
you know, today if you go into Wiki... Wikipedia and look at some of this. They say in there that O'Keefe's videos were highly edited to discredit
well,
those videos.
Weren't.
You know what I mean? But boy, they
well,
really broke
just,
this thing up, didn't
the
they?
The BS that they say everything has to be edited because what do you want to do? Is it supposed to be like C-SPAN where you watch?
Yeah.
All the boring, you know, the 10 hours of footage that are boring and that weren't used, you know. You have to edit. The question is whether it was deceptively edited, and there's no evidence that they were deceptively edited.
Exactly.
These people
Good
said
point.
What they said, and that was the correct context. And all of this stuff is just this is just misdirection. These are just red herrings that the left threw out to try to discredit the videos, which showed what they showed. And and you know, gave an accurate picture of how scummy the people at Acorn were.
Right. There, this is ongoing, is it not? You say that they finally, what, declared bankruptcy, Chapter 7, and liquidated...
Chapter 11, they went...
11 first, okay.
I guess it was 7.
I think they did.
It's the kind of bankruptcy you don't come back from.
Exactly, it was 7. It was a 7, according
to dissolve,
what
yeah.
I've read, yeah. And then they started to close down all of those chapters throughout the country.
They did.
But then Radke pulled back to New Orleans and started this international group, right?
Well, he'd had that for a while, and it wasn't included. He wasn't fired from it.
Okay.
So he just kept it and then put all of his energies into it and went, you know, hog wild with it, expanded it. And, you know, that's his base of operations now. So he, like, flies off to Rome and, you know, to places, into Egypt and all sorts of other places in order to do, in order to community organize, in order to spread his left-wing poison.
Well, he's running a labor organization out of New Orleans that has an exclusive deal with the Hyatt Regency. Is that the Hyatt Hotel or what? What is that about? Do you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the I'm not up on that, so I'm not sure.
But okay.
What he had is he was already the chief organizer of I guess it was SEIU. Is it 100 or 1,000? The SEIU local for Louisiana.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Right. I guess it was SEIU.
Yeah, because he's out of New Orleans still, I think now.
No, sorry, it was 100. It was 100.
Okay.
And then what happened is, it was too shady for SEIU, so the head office booted them out. They decertified them.
Okay.
As an SEIU affiliate, as an SEIU local, so they couldn't call themselves SEIU anymore. So they reverted to their earlier name when they were founded, before they joined SEIU, which I believe was ULU, United Labor Unions, and that to the. The last time I checked, that's the name that they were using, but I haven't checked up on them, you know, in the last year or so I'm not sure what they're doing. I can't add to that question. I know that they were involved in that Obama Navigator, those Obama Navigator grants were a group. They got a sub-grant from somebody, some money from the federal government.
Don't know about that.
Well, Obamacare navigators were people who were hired to explain Obamacare to the citizenry.
Okay.
You know, to people. You know, they got grants for that. They got a grant indirectly from the federal government by means of another group. So, you know, they were still getting this Acorn-affiliated group was, you know, getting government money. And do you want to know about the other branches that were created?
Yeah. What about those?
Yeah. Well, there's a whole bunch of them. There's something in Louisiana called, I can't remember what the name of the one in Louisiana is. It might be a Community Voice or something like that.
Okay.
But it's not one of the better known ones at this point. The bigger ones are, grew out of the bigger chapters of Acorn. The biggest ones were like New York and California and so on. So in California, it's now ACCE, which is something like Association of Californians for Community Empowerment. And then in New York, it's NYCC, New York Communities for Change, and Bertha Lewis was involved with that. But then she started her own group called the Black Institute, which is just focused on, you know, left-wing issues as they pertain to the African American community. There's something in Massachusetts, New England United for Change, and you know they have one in New Jersey. There's one in Minnesota Organizations for Change. There's one or two of them in Pennsylvania. There's one in Florida called Organize Now, and which I think is based in Orlando. There's something in Texas called Texas Organizing Project that is a direct descendant, a successor group to Acorn. And the one that has the cutest name is in New Mexico. That's Organizers for in the Land of Enchantment, and their acronym is OLE.
Oh, my God.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, that is, isn't it?
I mean, you gotta give it to them. That's kind of funny. I'll give them that.
You know, it's like walking down one of those Hollywood deals about the Old West where they have the saloons and everything in the fronts, you know? They put out these front organizations, and the names and everything look like they're for the poor people. And you go inside the deal, and it's nothing but a bunch of fundraising, generating money to pay salaries and to use people, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, you know, and they're well-intentioned with these names because it's a way to hustle, I guess, you know?
Yeah, well, it is a hustle.
You know, and they hustle people into this stuff. This shooting that occurred yesterday in Washington, in Alexandria, Representative Scalise, I think he's in critical condition.
Yeah, House Majority Whip.
Yeah, Majority Whip.
Republican from Louisiana was shot.
Right. Now, what are your ideas and what's going on? Is the left beginning to take action? This was just one individual, and we're not saying he was connected to any of these groups. I'm not saying that. We don't know that. But is the left becoming so hateful and resentful and anger that they're beginning to manifest physically and physical violence? What's your idea?
Exactly. I would say,
huh?
Violent rhetoric is beginning to manifest itself in violent actions.
Yes,
and like these are the people who've like on Twitter, the various liberals and progressives, you know, have been talking about killing Trump for a while, and
yes.
And Republicans how they should be, you know, that they're fascists, and you know, if you ran into a Nazi, you wouldn't, you know, you'd punch him in the face. So why not a Republican? And you know, they just stir up all this hatred and all this misinformation about, you know, what Republicans and conservatives are all about. So eventually, you know, somebody's going to take all this hype seriously. And this guy was his name, I guess, James Hodgkinson.
You're right.
The shooter.
Right.
Was a Bernie Sanders, according to his.
Social
his
network
page.
And right. Social network.
Right. James
stuff.
T.
Yeah.
Hodgkinson, who is a big Bernie Sanders supporter and a Trump hater, I'm looking at right now parts of his Facebook page that people grabbed, and he's
sure.
Like, Trump is a traitor. Trump's destroyed democracy. It's time to destroy Trump and company. You know, what you and I might call a left wing whack job.
Right, you
so
know
he was a
yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I just
yeah. Mm-hmm. What's happening now? You know, Peikoff, heir apparent to Ayn Rand, wrote a book called Ominous Parallels.
Yeah, Leonard Peikoff.
Yeah, Leonard, and he equated back in the '60s is when he wrote the book that America was beginning to look like pre-Nazi Germany with all these different groups and all this disorder. What are your thoughts?
The splintering of society is not
right.
A good thing.
No,
I don't think America's. It's hard to compare America today to Weimar Germany.
Yes,
like Germany
yes.
Between the two world wars, when there was instability and hyperinflation. You know, you needed to carry bushels of money to the store to buy a loaf of bread, you know, stuff like that. I don't think we're there, but identity politics has like driven a wedge through through the American body politic, I guess you could would be one way of putting it, and people are on edge and they're resentful.
Right.
Obama created all sorts of racism where it didn't exist. And he spent his 8 years community organizing, that is, agitating and causing trouble and turning Americans against each other and getting them resentful about race. America's made tremendous.
So what he did was he took the Alinsky model nationwide. That's what happened.
Yes, he did. And he got people to, like, you know, on each other, in each other's faces and to distrust each other. Like when his personal friend was arrested by the Cambridge, Massachusetts police, Skip Gates, the professor, you know, before he even knew any of the facts about the arrest, which was based on a misunderstanding. They thought he was breaking into a home, but it actually was his home. But before Obama knew the facts, he was already on talking to the media and saying the Cambridge police acted stupidly, if you remember that, early in his term. And so right from then, he was like setting the tone for the rest of his time in office, where, you know, he was creating resentment and hostility towards the police, and encouraging people to distrust them. And then later, when Black Lives Matter was created and Occupy Wall Street was created, he supported those groups actively, even after all of the crimes that their members committed, violent crimes, arsons, rapes, assaults, attempted murder, you know, lots of crimes. Only too happy to associate himself with these criminals.
Right.
They're on the left.
Right. Were not there some anarchist groups that went to Moscow on a global anti-globalism conference over there? Michigan.
Those things are happening all the
time.
We have, at where I work, Capital Research Center,
right.
CapitalResearch.org, we have a documentary series, a five-parter. And the first part came out on January 19th. It's called America Under Siege. And then the first part is, the subtitle is Civil War 2017. And it's about the January 20 disruptors, the people who wanted to prevent, cause as much trouble as possible for Trump when he was being inaugurated.
Yes, yes.
They said they wanted to stop the inauguration, but I think even they knew they couldn't. But they wanted to cause as much of a ruckus as possible. And, you know, to start off his term with, you know, riots and so on. And they, in that sense, they succeeded. But we did cover how a bunch of these anarchists and communists went over to Moscow for a meeting of an anti-globalization group.
Yes, yes, that's what
that was sponsored by Vladimir Putin. So in our documentary that you can watch at capitalresearch.org or at our movie studio website, which is called dangerousdocumentaries.com.
Well, now, yeah,
that's there right now.
Yeah, now, right. That's well presented and said. But then, on the other hand, or in another facet here, we had BlackRock managing $4.5 trillion backing Hillary. See, so we got this big money system out there. But are they helping to bring about this transformation of America through tides, or maybe not knowingly, or inadvertently, or whatever? But are they behind some of this world communist movement?
Well, some of them are, not all of them.
Some
of them are.
Okay.
Like, Wall Street is not. People have this idea that that big corporations are conservative, that they're on the right politically, and that's just not true.
Okay.
Some of them are, not many actually.
Okay.
Because it's more, they've been infected by cultural Marxism, and you know, all these people who went to school in the 60s you know, started gaining positions of authority, positions of power in corporate America. And, you know, there is...
I like what you have to say, Matthew, because you know what's going on, and you're very fair-minded, okay?
Oh, well, thanks very much, George.
Yeah.
A lot of these people, it's bled over. The culture from the campuses has bled over into the culture at large. So
yes.
All of these things, like, you know, Jeffrey Immelt, I think he's just retiring now as CEO of General Electric. He was a big crony capitalist, very friendly with the left.
Right, right.
You know, groups like Walmart were at one point, they go back and forth. Walmart at one point was signed on to a lot elements of the liberal agenda, but then it's backed off, and then it goes back, and, you know.
I got you.
It goes back and forth. Target has been, you know, infiltrated by people with this kind of thinking, and that's why they're encourage men to use the ladies' bathroom.
Yeah, more, you could tell by that
Target,
yeah.
If they feel like it, if they claim to identify as women. And that can't be a good thing.
I think the general public's not for those additional airstreams and stuff like that, generally. What do you think?
No, they're not for that. If they want to resolve the issue,
yeah,
then just have one seat, you know, private bathrooms.
Yes, just have it for anyone. And, well, you know, in France they do that, you know.
Then you lock it when you go,
yeah,
when you go in, right?
I was in France, Paris, in 64, and they only had one restroom per cafe that I remember, and everybody, but you could lock the door and use the restroom and then come back out. See, either one, male or female.
Yeah, but you should not be, even if you can't do that, you should not be encouraging men who identify as women to use the ladies' room.
Oh.
That is just asking for trouble, and you're just giving an excuse to pedophiles and rapists to...
We had two signs on a place here in Austin, okay? It was a bar, and they had shuffleboard in it, so it was go way back. But they had two doors for the restrooms, and it was had Irish, they had Irish dogs, these Irish, pointers, you know? And one dog was sitting, and the other one was on point. So
right,
it was men and women. And I thought that was pretty humorous, you know, but that was way back. But anyway, it's getting, is America, because of the, over the decades, it's been debased and the family breakdown and alcohol and drugs and all that. Has it changed now? And there's a lot of upset people that are more unstable than they used to be 40, 50 years ago, or what?
Well, I was only born 50 years ago, so it's hard
to
say.
Well,
I was born in 1966.
Oh, okay, okay.
I guess I'm a child of the 60s. At least I was
right,
wearing diapers during the
60s. Right, right.
There has been, but I my understanding, you know, according to studies by social scientists, is that the family has been broken down, especially the black family has been torn apart by the welfare state, because it's it provided incentives to break up families, you know, like a woman couldn't get certain benefits, and this is I think true in some places even today. She couldn't get certain benefits if a man was living there, so sometimes welfare inspectors would go around and check to see if a man was living there. So you know, maybe they had their reasons for the policy, but that's not encouraging any sort of stability in human relationships.
Right, right.
This sort of thing is trying to engineer, you know, manipulate human behavior, and you run into trouble with that. And this is our founding fathers, the framers of the Constitution, were realists. They accepted man as he is, as he was, and they, you know, they put together a constitution that recognized human foibles, human weaknesses, and tried to control them. And as opposed to idealism, people speak about it like it's a good thing. It's not a good thing. It's a terrible thing. You know, 100 million people died in the 20th century because of idealism. You know, people thinking that they could build a new man, you know, the communists.
Yes, the utopian society, see, idea.
That's right. That's idealism. And idealism is a dangerous, destructive thing. Or like, with, you know, Hitler wanting to build a master race that would control the world. And this is all, you know, all this utopian craziness has gotten a lot of people killed. But in America, we're opposed to that kind of thing, and we created a constitution that tried to keep us away from that kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of America has been pulled in the opposite direction over time. And so, you know, we have to fight back against these crazy people who want safe spaces on university campuses for people of a certain color or people of a particular social group, who want special privileges for ethnocultural or demographic groups, or who want special rights for people based on their sexual preference. Everybody should just have the same rights.
It's more factionalizing and dividing and divisiveness, isn't it? Huh?
Absolutely. That's what identity politics is all about. It's getting people they don't identify as Americans first.
The idea
of the melting pot is very weak nowadays, and it's a great idea that people come from another country and then they can keep their little personal traditions at home or whatever, but they accept the basic tenets of American society and they blend in.
Right.
You know, they don't wear hijabs.
Right.
or you know, things like that, covering their faces when they go out.
Right.
And they act like Americans. Right. Then when they get home, if they want to have their little religious ceremonies or whatever, that's fine. Nobody would have a problem with that. But when, you know, people are encouraged to put these tribal loyalties over loyalty to America, that's a very dangerous thing.
Yes, it is. Was not progressivism at the turn of the century a means by which to try to usher in these ideals and utopian ideas of these idealistic new political changes, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of the progressives were big before World War II. A lot of the progressives in America and England were big fans of Hitler and Nazi Germany. And,
yes.
Benito Mussolini, they thought, you know, they'd write songs about him. You know that 1920s show tune, you know, You're the Top?
Oh, okay. You know?
Well, anyway, they said it praises Mussolini in the song, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I don't want to sing it for you. I don't want to embarrass myself on your radio show.
But anyway. Go ahead.
He was praised in the popular culture.
Well, okay. J.P. Morgan. His first hand man there, and it was Lamont, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thomas W. Lamont made $120 or $30 million loan to Mussolini before World War II. So
yeah.
there was that financial thing that helped build up
Hitler. Did he get paid back?
I don't know. I guess his blood was dripping when they hung him up in Rome. I don't know. But anyway, this financial thing has always been in the back.
Yeah, he could have sent the bill collectors to that Esso station where they hung him up. Yeah.
Right. Now, I've got David, what's his name? Rubenstein, founder of Carlyle, saying at a Davos meeting, okay, that maybe state capitalism like China uses for capitalism is the answer for us.
Well, there's another word for it, and that's corporatism, or also known
as
the economic expression of fascism.
Right.
So that whenever you hear the phrase public-private partnership, you should get nervous.
Yes, exactly. And that's what not only the Bilderberg pushes, but the Davos people push. They push that private.
Well, yeah, they're all crony capitalists, state capitalists.
They are. They are. Yeah.
They're all corporatists, and the left misuses that term. They think it means someone who's vaguely pro-corporation, and that is not at all what it means. It means when government and businesses and labor get together and they impose policies on the country.
Right.
And the corporate state, in the corporate state, obviously the government had this, the state, the government apparatus has the upper hand.
Right.
You know, like when Hitler took power, there's a difference between, there isn't much of a difference between national socialists and regular socialists, like Marxian socialists, okay? But think about it. If you're a communist, that's a tall order to rip everybody's private property away from them.
Right.
Okay?
Exactly.
That's painful.
Yeah.
Why not just bribe the captains of industry to be on your side by giving them special sweetheart deals and whatever, and monopolies and big contracts to create ammunition and armaments and so on.
Right.
War material. That's the easier way to total control,
right.
And that is what the fascists, people like Hitler, did. It's a hell of a lot easier, and I think these people may not identify with Hitler and Mussolini, but you know, that's they're their role models.
Yeah, what's happened though, Matthew, is that the leftists are being schooled to hate capitalism, but in a general way, all capitalism. See what I mean? And I always,
right, all capital.
Yeah, I always say that little dressmaker in downtown San Antonio that has her savings and she starts a little dress shop, that's real capitalism. See what I mean?
Mark Levin said that capitalism isn't even a really good word. It was created by the left to discredit.
Right.
To discredit capitalist beliefs that, right. You know, really it should be called something like, you know, marketism or,
free enterprise. Yeah, what we've been describing here is they're a very monopolistic statism, a very authoritarian type of thing from the left that want to impose their will on us. Is that fair to say?
Right. Yes.
See?
That's what socialism and communism and corporatism are all about.
Right, right. And but now they're being funded sort of secretly through these different funding mechanisms where it's hard to trace who they are and what they're all about.
Or not so secretly. It's not always hidden. For example, I went to an Al Sharpton conference.
Okay.
Not to stir up trouble, just to watch, observe, and, you know, report on what
sure.
they were doing.
Sure.
And it was here in Washington, D.C., maybe 5 years ago at the Washington Convention Center.
Okay.
And it was during the Obama era, and National Action Network, that's the name of Sharpton's group.
Okay.
The conference was in their name, and it had all, you know, big power players, Andrea Mitchell from NBC, and, you know, all sorts of prominent people. The Secretary of HUD, John Donovan, showed up, so did Attorney General Eric Holder. But what was striking to me is that I noticed in the program for the event that they gave you when you registered, is that a sponsor, a financial sponsor of the event, was Fox News parent company, News Corporation.
My gosh, yeah.
You know, even they,
yeah.
Even they,
my God,
they pay protection money to these groups.
Like green mail that, yeah.
You would never expect Fox or Fox's parent would be involved in sponsoring an Al Sharpton event, but yes, they were.
Oh, I
all
tell
the,
you.
All the big, respectable corporations, lots of them had signed on for this event. So,
man,
this sort
else.
Of thing has bled over into
like you're
the
saying,
culture at large.
Yeah, cultural Marxism has indoctrinated a lot of people in a lot of different ways, but it's bled over into their positions now. Right.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and, I got you.
You know, turning it back is, you know, this is not something that's going to be solved with one election.
No, it's not.
It's a long-term project, and you know, one of the first aspects of it is you know, education has to be has to be restored to its American education has to be restored to its former greatness,
right.
For lack of a better way of putting it.
We've got about a minute and a half left.
Teach American children that America is good, basically.
Well, you know, Hillsdale College come to my mind in Michigan. Hillsdale College. That's what they're doing. Exactly.
They're one of the very few. They have a campus. They have an office here in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
They have a lot of good lectures. They're across from the Heritage Foundation on Capitol Hill.
Right. We've got about a minute left to go now, Matthew. So what would your closing statements be? I'm sorry to cut you off there.
Oh, okay. Well, let me remind people how to reach me or buy my book.
Sure. We have all those click-offs up right now on the site.
Okay, yeah.
On the broadcast site.
It's pronounced Vadum, Matthew Vadum, V-A-D-U-M.
Okay. Right.
And I have a website, MatthewVadum.com. And capitalresearch.org is my day job, capitalresearch.org. And I do a lot of freelance writing for David Horowitz Freedom Center at their frontpagemag.com website. That's frontpagemag.com. And,
okay, boy, I like.
Conversion Inc., the book on Amazon. And I've got another book coming out in the next couple of days called Team Jihad.
Really?
Team Jihad, published by the Center for Security Policy Press. And they asked me to write a pamphlet of, you know, a short pamphlet. But I I wrote too much, so they decided to make it a book instead.
Well, you write
times as much as they wanted.
You're a well-written author, and you really write to the point, and you're very clear in your writings, and I appreciate all your hard work in this area.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Teen Jihad is about how the left works with Islam to undermine America, by the way.
Boy, that will be good. We'll have you back on interview on that, too. But thank you for being with us this evening, Matthew Verdum.
You're welcome.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.